Welcome in. This is the FPC Chiefs podcast. I'm Braden Holacek, the managing editor and writer for Full Press Coverage Chiefs of FullPressCoverage.com here on this Tuesday edition of the show, episode number 31. As we're coming off a weekend with a couple of moves made by the Chiefs, which is going to be the focus of this episode, just kind of how Kansas City is excelling in their run it back mantra and trying to become back-to-back Super Bowl champions, hopefully, in 2020. Also, we have more draft coverage that we're going to talk about today. We had the FPC Kansas City Chiefs mock draft 2.0, our second of three mock drafts before April's draft commences here in just about a couple of weeks on Thursday, April 23rd, which there's also more official news on that we can talk about today on this episode. But yeah, it was an interesting weekend. It seems like it's been a long weekend since our last podcast episode. Just a lot of news out there swirling around. I mean, just, you know, days running together during this coronavirus situation. But it was good to see the Chiefs make a couple of moves on early part of the weekend. On Friday, we saw the Chiefs, the biggest move that they made, the move that I kind of want to make this episode the bulk of, is Sammy Watkins. Obviously, he's a guy, you know, that we have talked a lot about this offseason. What was going to happen with him? Was he going to get traded, released? You know, what exactly was going to happen with him? You know, once we saw the DeMarcus Robinson re-signing from the weekend before this past weekend, we pretty much knew that with Sammy Watkins, it was likely going to be a release or a restructured contract, and the Chiefs were able to agree to a restructured contract with Sammy Watkins on Friday. So the biggest thing here, I mean, just taking a pay cut first off, I mean, it's hard to get a lot of NFL players to take pay cuts, especially, you know, Sammy Watkins. He's dealt with a lot in his NFL career, former first-round pick of the Buffalo Bills. You know, dealt with many injuries, even just in Kansas City during the 2 years that he's been with the team so far. But the biggest thing I think for him is when he has been on the field, especially during the playoffs the last 2 years, he's shown that he can be counted on. And that showed even more in the Super Bowl winning season. I think as good as he was in the 2018 playoffs against the Colts and the Patriots, I think he showed even more in the playoffs this past postseason in the run up to the Super Bowl. So just, you know, first off, getting a player to agree to a pay cut is not easy. At the same time, I mean, the numbers on the contract as far as how much money he could reach in incentives for a total number on the contract in 2020 is still a little high. But overall, I mean, the Chiefs win here by just getting him to agree to take the pay cut. So he was entering the last year of a three-year, $48 million deal this season. And on Friday, the Chiefs and Watkins came to a new one-year agreement that will pay him a base salary of $9 million on the year. You know, he was scheduled to make, obviously, roughly around $14 to $16 million this season, had around a $21 million salary cap hit number with the dead money that was involved as well. Besides his salary, again, this year's figure, based off incentives, it could increase to $16 million salary for 2020. But again, a base salary for $9 million on the new restructured contract. And again, Kansas City, as we've talked a lot about, they've been up against the salary cap all offseason. We talked recently one episode that some sites have them with currently only about $177 in salary cap space. So this move did free up a little bit of salary cap space for 2020, which was $5 million. So that's huge right now. You know, it's kind of interesting to see how Coach Andy Reid and the general manager Brett Veach talked about the Sammy Watkins situation. Andy Reid was a little bit more coy on Watkins' situation, even as recently as, you know, a day or two before this news came out on Friday last week. When Andy Reid had a conference call just talking about, you know, how he's been dealing with the quarantine and the coronavirus lately, you know, he was a little bit more coy. So, you know, he kind of said that it was up to Brett Veach. And Brett Veach, I think, during this entire offseason, every chance that he's had or every time he's been asked about Sammy Watkins, he's usually talked about Sammy in a positive light. And, you know, we wrote in the Plain Brett Veach Part 2 series back earlier, the beginning part of March, or middle to late part of March, we talked about, you know, just how much Brett Veach had invested and how much pride he has put into Sammy Watkins. We talked about in that article that it seemed like he was likely going to stay just because of Brett Veach's love for him. So just the fact that Brett was able to get him to take a pay cut again was huge. But again, it's kind of interesting. There is some things here. I mean, Kansas City, it's a big win to get him to agree to this restructured contract. But there's some parts of the deal that have emerged, you know, since Friday's news that make this really interesting, you know, given other opportunities or moves that are out there for the Chiefs right now. You know, Adam Schefter of ESPN is saying the Chiefs gave Watkins a no-trade clause to stay in Kansas City. And also, it does sound like, you know, it does sound like the Chiefs felt like they didn't have a lot of other options out there to replace Sammy maybe this season. Again, with this coronavirus, I mean, it's a unprecedented and, you know, very difficult offseason for a lot of teams, you know, being able to sign the guys they wanted to due to medical situations and all that. Plus, it's a pretty deep wide receiver draft class. So, I mean, again, I think it's a good move to keep Sammy Watkins given what he's done on the field when healthy. But at the same time, it was interesting to see the demands that the team had to make to keep him. But again, I think you bite the bullet on most of the stuff. I think Kansas City's shown that the last few years, you know, with people that, you know, look at every move and break it down sometimes too seriously. I think they're, you know, seeing those demands, it's interesting, but I think Kansas City, you know, with every player, you got to play pay a price. And I think to keep Sammy, they did everything they could to make him happy. And that's also a good thing for the team. You know, freeing up cap space and keeping him in the building, because the important thing also, you know, not just re-signing those two guys and Sammy Watkins and Marcus Robinson, you're returning your top five wide receivers now with Byron Pringle as the fifth guy, looking like he could emerge and break out soon. He got a chance in a few games in 2019, had a key lead block on a game, the game-sealing touchdown run in the Super Bowl by Damian Williams. So, you know, overall, I think there's a lot to like from this move. Very, very interesting avenues to look at. But overall, I think it's a move that shows that Kansas City is just continuing to win at their own game, being able to, you know, keep their players happy and still make a lot of moves that keep the team afloat or also keep them improved. You know, Sammy Watkins entered last season. Again, he still dealt with some injuries, but he entered last season kind of saying that it was the most healthy he's felt maybe since his NFL career had started. So, again, you do see that the injuries came up, but I think you see how clutch he was in a lot of games, especially during the playoffs this past season. There's a lot to like. And overall, I mean, it's a one-year restructured contract, so it's not an extension. So if they were wanting to move on from Sammy Watkins, but maybe couldn't because of the salary cap implications and everything, basically, you re-signed DeMarcus Robinson and Sammy Watkins for this year, and you have a lot of opportunities to replace them if you have to in 2021 next year. So you take what you can from Sammy Watkins this upcoming season. I think it's a good move, really, in a lot of ways. Again, freeing up salary cap space and just also keeping your top four or five rigs intact for the depth chart, where it looked like it was going to be an offseason where they were going to lose both Sammy Watkins and DeMarcus Robinson, if not both, at least one of those guys or the other. So it's been huge to see Kansas City continue just to win at their own game, being able to do what they know how to do best. And also right now, I think you look at it, I mean, the run it back mantra, that's been something that's been said a lot lately with the Chiefs and just how much they've been able to retain guys. There was something I saw after the Sammy Watkins signing that the Chiefs right now, you know, given how much they've been able to retain from this past season of their roster, It's the biggest percentage of team that is going to return for the following season since the 2001 New England Patriots for Super Bowl winning team. So it's hard to retain a lot of your own guys and keep the team intact. But so far, the Chiefs have excelled at it. Again, they just continue, I think, to win in their own ways. And that showed in some different avenues with the Sammy Watkins restructured contract from Friday. So that was an interesting move to see over the weekend, especially just the timing of it. I mean, not too long after the Demarcus Robinson re-signing, at a time where the market was very slow and hit a standstill just because of the coronavirus and a lot of other free agencies and trade moves have already been made. And I just think when you look at this, the timing of it's really interesting. But again, I think you take what you can from Sammy, and it's a positive deal. As far as another move that the Chiefs made over the weekend, also on Friday, they signed tight end Ricky Seals-Jones, undrafted out of Texas A&M in 2017, signed with the Cardinals, was there for 2 years before being one of their last roster cuts entering the 2019 season, and then he latched on with the Cleveland Browns this year. This is a move I kind of wrote that it shouldn't really blow anybody away. It's not going to be anything that's going to totally move the needle for the Chiefs in a big way. But at the same time, for that tight end number two position on the depth chart behind Travis Kelce, Ricky Seals-Jones' production throughout his career so far has doubled what the Chiefs have had in that spot over the last few years. The catches, the yards, and the touchdowns, especially Demetrius Harris. A couple few years ago had a lot of opportunities, but again, the drops was the biggest thing with him. Last year, Blake Bell, more of a blocking tight end signing than anything. I think with this move, this is a move that, Ricky Seals-Jones can excel in an offense like the Chiefs. I think his type of game will fit better in Kansas City than most of the other offenses in the league, given what the Chiefs have right now. Again, you're going to want to use your wide receivers that you have as much as you can with Travis Kelce. But this is a depth signing, I think, that is smart by Brett Veach. A low-key good move here, because, again, just his fit stylistically with the team. He's a guy, for some reason, defenders just seem to leave wide open a lot. He has a lot of yards after catch opportunities. And again, just the production stat-wise, not just nearly doubling what the Chiefs have had in that tight end two spot over the last few years, but also just the fact that he's a red zone target. He can score a lot. And I think you also see that he's pretty versatile. He can block for you as well. So Ricky Seals-Jones signing, that was one that I did not expect to see. I mean, I thought tight end would be, if they addressed it, I thought they'd maybe try to do it late in the draft this year, if they were able to acquire more picks, or they just go undrafted free agent route and add who they wanted to in the next few days after the draft. But overall, it's a good signing. I mean, you take what Ricky Seals-Jones has done so far in his NFL career with Arizona and with Cleveland, and I think that you get a guy here that he's overcome a lot. He's a hardworking guy. Again, can catch and block for you. So a two-way player there, and I think has better abilities overall, again, than what the Chiefs have had in that spot. Really, since they've had Travis Kelce play as a consistent tight end number one. So really, again, a nice low-key depth signing for the Chiefs here. And another thing I wanted to say with this Ricky Seals-Jones signing is behind Travis Kelce before this signing, the Chiefs really only had Deion Yeldon as far as another tight end that had starting experience. He's a guy that got a little bit of an opportunity in 2018, did what he could with minimal opportunities. Looked like he was going to have a good opportunity in 2019, but again, injuries kind of just during the offseason and preseason hurt him. They signed Blake Bell. He played in at least a couple games, really, against Detroit, and I believe against maybe Indianapolis, or at least against Detroit and Baltimore. I think he got a little bit of snaps, but overall, Deion Yeldon, just his stock has come down, what little of it there was, just due to injuries and production. So this is a move. I mean, I think, again, it's not going to totally move the needle, but for the offense, it's adding another weapon. You got to continue to surround Patrick Mahomes with as good of weapons as you can, and I think this is definitely an upgrade for that tight end two spot compared to previous guys that Mahomes has had with Demetrius Harris and Blake Bell in that spot. So those are a couple of moves that the Chiefs made since our last podcast episode. Again, the run it back mantra, though, that's what I kind of wanted to focus on. I mean, basically how much percent of the team has been retained from the Super Bowl winning squad last year is pretty amazing. Now, the biggest thing is still Chris Jones received the franchise tag. There was some reports out there over the weekend that the Chiefs may have not offered him much yet in contract offers, which is kind of a little head scratching if that's true. I'm sure they've done their due diligence trying to work out the numbers, and you know they've had to deal with other things with the salary cap. But you know, I'd say re-signing cornerback Bashaud Breeland if they can, whether that's closer to training camp or in the coming months or coming weeks after the draft, because I think Bashaud Breeland's a cornerback that would definitely be a guy that the Chiefs would want back. If they're able to bring him back, or even if not, if you're still able to bring Chris Jones back on a long-term deal, or he at least plays on the tag in 2020, it's pretty incredible how much of the Super Bowl core the Chiefs have retained. Again, since the 2001 Patriots, no other team has currently had this high of a percentage of their team return for the following season. So that's pretty impressive to have that number that high, especially before the NFL draft even takes place. And again, in a year with this coronavirus, I mean, there's so much that's kind of changed in how teams are operating, but the Chiefs, I think, have shown that they are continuing to win at their own game, and you know, they're chugging along compared to other teams that are trying to change so much at once, that, you know, are going to have big make or break seasons in 2020. The Chiefs are just trying to do what they can to keep doing the things the way they've done them, and hopefully win another Super Bowl in 2020. Because just like the Patriots, not just retaining their Super Bowl core, but also Patriots back in 03, 04, I believe were the years that last time we saw a team win back-to-back Super Bowls. So right now, the Chiefs are sitting really well. Again, I really like the Ricky Seals-Jones piece, but I like Sammy Watkins re-signing even more, just because, again, the Chiefs, how much they're keeping intact at the wide receiver position for Mahomes. But also, it's a one-year deal for the Chiefs, where you know they're showing right now that they're moving on a year-to-year basis. They're not locking up too much in the future. We've talked before on previous episodes where teams, you know, trying to gun for Super Bowls and continuous playoff seasons. You know, the Rams come to mind, the Jaguars come to mind, where they had one-hit wonder years. They made it close to the Super Bowl or did make it, but didn't get the job done. And they, you know, put so much eggs into the future basket for multiple years down the road, where the Chiefs right now are showing they're all you know, they're kind of operating on a year-to-year basis, which is also really impressive. And kind of just goes to show how much Brett Veach has done as general manager just in his short 3 years with that title. So that's kind of it, man, for the latest news and the latest signings for the Chiefs right now over the weekend since our last podcast episode. Of course, I wanted to touch on our latest article topics over at Full Press Coverage Chiefs. So yeah, I've kind of already talked about the Ricky Seals-Jones signing, so I won't really go too much deeper into that. But if you haven't checked out the Ricky Seals-Jones piece on him joining the Chiefs offense, that came out on Sunday, so go check that out. I guess a couple more things relating to the NFL draft is what we'll close out with this episode. So first off, the NFL officially announced the day before this podcast episode comes out that the NFL draft will go fully virtual. It's something that's been rumored for a long time. You know, it seems like a lot of stuff has just been reported, whether it's NFL or anything else. A lot of stuff that's been reported, it just seems like has been continuously said over and over again. But yeah, the NFL officially made the decision to go fully virtual with the NFL draft. And we talked on previous episode about the NFL not wanting to move the NFL draft. It's going to stay on the same date, Thursday, April 23rd through Saturday, April 25th. Of course, again, there's a lot that is kind of negative, I guess, or some, you know, takeaways that are difficult for a lot of people that's involved for the draft staying on the same date, of course, you have some prospects from smaller schools that, of course, their draft stock could slide, and you're going to see a lot of undrafted free agents that I think are going to be very impressive undrafted free agent signings. You'll look back and wonder how they didn't go drafted. There's going to be a lot of teams that are in make or break years, really having to make some interesting moves. And again, I think it's also blown out of proportion a little bit, though, too. I mean, the teams have been scouting. I mean, it's not like teams have not been doing anything to prepare for the draft. Just the fact that it's all online now, we're going to see some different changes for how technology plays a factor for these teams. But yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing to take away from the draft staying on the same date, now going officially fully virtual, it's really going to show what the teams know, how much they know their stuff of this year's draft, how much are willing to just, punt away the 2020 season if they're not in a position to compete, or they didn't make the moves they thought they were going to be able to make before the draft, in make or break seasons. So that's going to be an interesting thing to watch, see how much these teams and coaches and everybody really knows their stuff. Of course, every year you have surprises. Some players going earlier than expected. I don't think that's going to change. I don't think we're going to see a big difference there. But I think, again, there's a lot of guys that probably could have been drafted earlier that are going to see their stock slide a little bit just because of interviews in person not being conducted, pro days being canceled. And of course, again, like I said, I mean, it's not like teams weren't preparing for the draft, but some of them that, are not used to fully scouting off of players' game tape only, that's going to play a huge factor. So, but of course, one of the latest articles that we had come out over at Full Press Chiefs was our FBC Chiefs Mock Draft 2.0. And the first one, I made it a point not to make any trades, just because showing the fact, the Chiefs only have five draft picks right now, all in the first five rounds. But a lot of people that have been conducting mock drafts, including myself, have been trying to use as many trades as possible for the Chiefs to stockpile more picks. Because as much as they have retained their own roster in 2020, there is a good amount of holes still to fill to, just make sure that this team wants to maintain the level of success that they had last season. So I traded back in this draft twice before making any picks. The first one being that I sent the first round pick at 32 overall to the Chicago Bears, acquiring a second round pick at 43 and a fifth round pick at 163. Now, the Chiefs ideally moving back probably want a little more than a second and a fifth, at least maybe a second and a third, depending what you can get and what teams you're trading with, or at least a second and a fourth. But in this situation, the fifth round pick, I think, especially again with certain guys' stocks being the way it will be this year, is not as bad as it could be. And then you're not usually probably going to see teams get 2 sevens for a sixth round pick, or sorry, a six and a seven for a fifth round pick. But I got that in this scenario where I acquired a sixth round pick at 213 overall and a seventh round pick at 230 overall from the New England Patriots. For a fifth round pick at 163, this allowed the Patriots to jump up back into the draft about 20 to 30 spots earlier than what their next selection would have been. So I kind of helped New England out there and got a couple more late picks. So seven picks now is what I ended up making in total, instead of five. So I went really best player available that I thought was there on the board at 43 overall. Second round pick, cornerback AJ Terrell from Clemson. We actually wrote a draft profile on him earlier in the week before doing this mock draft. So we talked in the draft profile, obviously, that he's very smooth in coverage, man coverage, ability would fit really well with Kansas City, and he's a guy that has pretty solid smooth footwork as well. He's able to lay big hits on opponents, and his timing to disrupt routes at the catch point is a plus. I think he'd have the freedom to move around in the defensive backfield in a defense like Steve Spagnuolo's and cover large chunks in the field. But just kept talking about the situation in the draft at 43, to me, cornerback is probably their biggest need just because of who they're bringing back from 2020 is so scarce. But you also have the fact that I just think, given what the Chiefs have shown, what they valued over the last few years, and who was still on the board at that point, I don't think they go linebacker or interior O-line in that spot, just because, again, who was on the board, but also those are the next biggest needs to me after cornerback. So going A.J. Terrell in this spot, I think, was a no-brainer. There was not a lot of other cornerbacks that I really could go in this spot either. You have Ohio State's Damon Arnett and Auburn's Noah Igbinoghene. That kind of fit this value along with A.J. Terrell, but they were both off the board at this point. So A.J. Terrell was the first pick I made. Second pick, also in the second round, 63rd overall, is interior offensive lineman Robert Hunt from Louisiana Lafayette. He's a guy we draft profiled way back early in March. And I think it's a very realistic pick here, just like A.J. Terrell would be at 43, just because of the fact that I think he's a guy that his stock right now for NFL teams is rumored to be pretty high, just because of the versatility he's shown, the experience having the 40-year starters role at Louisiana Lafayette. And of course, he's a guy that I think, not just being as versatile as he is, but you know, he's displayed a good ability of strength and power. I think defenders have given him trouble with his footwork and timing, but overall Kansas City would welcome, I think, his determination and his nastiness to kick him inside at guard, potentially replace Laurent Duvernay-Tardif in the future. And again, I think just a very realistic pick here, a smaller school guy that is going to be a day two pick somewhere, at least at what NFL rumors indicate, a day two pick. And I think his starting experience and just his ability to win in different roles, that's going to serve Kansas City well. And it was tough for me here because I really almost wanted to go running back Clyde Edwards-Helaire. But again, I think what I wanted to do was make this draft obviously as realistic as I could. And I don't know really if Kansas City will go running back that high unless they feel like, you know, they don't have any other avenues that they can go at that certain pick in the first or second round. So then the third pick that we made, third round, 96th overall, was another defensive back in Terrell Burgess from Utah. He's actually listed as a safety, and I know some people may look at that and think that the Chiefs don't have a need at safety with Tyrann Mathieu and Juan Thornhill being the duo that they have built already. You also have Daniel Sorensen, showed a pretty impressive season given what he had been in the past in 2019. But I think also with what right now the Chiefs have at cornerback, just the scarcity and depth. You have Tyrann Mathieu, who moves around the field so much already. He can move into the slot and play cornerback. But this draft pick in Terrell Burgess, I think, could also move around the field. And cornerback, safety hybrid. He's a converted corner, but played a lot more safety at the end of his tenure at Utah. So I think it's very likely that we could see the Chiefs double dip at defensive back, whether it's two corners or a corner and a safety or a corner safety hybrid like this. I think it's just because, again, maximizing what you can and the value in this draft and where your team's at right now, I think it's very likely they do double dip at defensive back no matter how many picks they have. So with this having seven picks, I still went a second defensive back in the first three picks here. And what I think Terrell Burgess really brings to the table, again, not just the versatility to move around the field, but I think, man, he's very tight in coverage. His man coverage reps stand out on his tape. He's got a good sense of keen and diagnosing opposing routes and concepts and just reading the quarterback's eyes, but not getting lost in space. His physical tools, to me, look very smooth, and I think most of all his instincts would pair well, like we said, with the likes of Tyrann Mathieu, Juan Thornhill, Charvarius Ward, Rashad Fenton, and in this case, A.J. Terrell, the other draft pick. So, again, I think Steve Spagnuolo also likes to utilize the three safety look. That's been something that's been more recent in draft rumors that the Chiefs have been, you know, meeting via conference call with more safeties, especially versatile guys that can move around the field. You let Tyrann Mathieu move more into the slot maybe a little more if he needs to be. He's capable of playing corner, has the want to play corner, you know, rather than just being a safety. So I think using that three safety look a lot, which Spagnuolo likes to do, where they can confuse the defenses and have as much speed as they can get on the back end, that's going to be very key. And again, I think that just goes to the Chiefs archetype, where they're at right now as a team, why they probably will double dip at defensive back in the NFL draft this year. So first three picks, again, A.J. Terrell at corner, Robert Hunt at interior offensive line, and then Terrell Burgess there, who can play safety and corner. Fourth round pick at 138 overall. It's another guy we wrote a draft profile on last week. Linebacker Logan Wilson from Wyoming. His instincts and his anticipation is what sticks out the most in this game, as we said in his draft profile. Very smart player from Wyoming here. I think his added range and coverage ability would suit the Chiefs well. Again, his man coverage ability still needs some work, but his ability to just sit back in a zone and read and react is going to be or would fit the Chiefs really well if they were able to draft him. One of my favorite linebackers in this class for the middle rounds, but I mean, I got him here in this scenario, fourth round pick, 138 overall, but I think he's a guy that really could be a higher selection than what's kind of been, you know, what's kind of been taken out by draft, by mock draft practicing. So he's a guy I could actually see go maybe in the 80s or 90s at the earliest, which the Chiefs could still get him there, but I mean, in this scenario where you get him in the fourth round, I think that's big, big time value. So I'm just saying there, that's a guy, even if he's a Chiefs prospect, he probably goes earlier than this, unless there's some doubt from other teams that allows him to slide this far. But again, his instincts and his anticipation, good sense of body control, and the consistent tackling and effort that he shows, I think would obviously fit the Chiefs well. And it's a linebacker spot that the Chiefs, I think, definitely need to add an impact body at, who can make plays on early downs right away this season, especially with losing Reggie Ragland. They're still trying to figure things out with Ben Neiman. So Logan Wilson, I think, is a guy that I would definitely like to see in Kansas City. Moving on to the fifth pick in this mock draft, fifth round pick, 177 overall. One of my favorite late round running backs is Joshua Kelly from UCLA. Again, we know how much the Chiefs value Damian Williams and even Darwin Thompson. You know, there's a part of me, we talked about running backs before with the different draft profiles we've done. If there's an impact guy that the Chiefs can get early, I don't think they'll hesitate to pull the trigger if they really think it's going to just fit the team's strength and you maximize off building more to the offense. But I also look at the running back room right now, you know, behind guys like Damian Williams, Darwin Thompson, and obviously Daryl Williams, who's been there a few years. You have guys that they have seen success from in training camp in the preseason in the past couple of years with Marcus Marshall. And then you have Mike Weber, I believe is his name. I'm kind of blanking on his name right now, from Ohio State. He was in the draft last year. And was an undrafted free agent with the Dallas Cowboys. But I still think it's possible the Chiefs go mid to late running back in the draft. But I think they really like their room right now. But I think you think about Damian Williams' contract. You know, they just picked up his club option, yes. But you never know how much longer he would be able to go in this draft, or, you know, in this tenure with Kansas City. Running backs can lose their stock pretty quickly. So I think it would not be a bad idea to add to the running back room. And with Joshua Kelly, he showed a lot in the Senior Bowl and in the pre-draft process. I think he helped his stock as well as he could have. He's a guy that showed his ability to change direction pretty well, but also when he sees a hole, he's a pretty determined runner, doesn't waste too much time, good physical downhill running back that the Chiefs could add there. Moving on to the sixth round, one of the picks that I acquired from the New England Patriots at 213 overall is defensive end Tipa Galai. He's a guy that actually started his career at TCU and then ended up going to Utah State. Really with his build, you know, a little bit undersized, but not horrible. He's a guy I know that a lot of people in draft communities have talked a lot about as a late-round defensive end prospect who can maybe see the field pretty quickly as a rookie if he gets into the right system. I think the Chiefs do need to add another pass rusher on the end this year. with the loss of Emmanuel Ogba. You know, even if you bring Chris Jones back, you have him move a little bit to different positions on the defensive line. Obviously, Frank Clark is going to be there, but I think you saw it last year with San Francisco, how teams can maximize with having as much pass rush as they can. And, of course, with the Chiefs having the scarcity right now, again, entering the draft at the defensive back position and especially at corner, you kind of limit that and mitigate that by adding more to the pass rush. I don't know if Belai would totally see the field early with the Chiefs. I mean, Alex Okafor is still there, of course, too, opposite of Frank Clark. But he's a guy, I think, just what he showed at Utah State and TCU even. He wins in a lot of ways when you don't expect him to. A quick edge rush off the twitch that he has. And Steve Spagnuolo's defense for edge rushers usually looks to capitalize off of pass rushers that have heavy hands. They use with their hand rush moves and their pass rush counter moves rather than just speed. So I think Galay would fit that mold pretty well as a sixth round pick there. I think he could go maybe a little earlier, even in a year where I think some guys' draft stock could slide, but in that spot, I was happy to pick him up as a pass rusher in the sixth round. And then the last pick I made, of course, now after the Ricky Seals-Jones signing, I don't think this pick would happen, but we made this mock draft before the Ricky Seals-Jones news came out. Tight end Steven Sullivan is who I went with my seventh and final pick, seventh round, 240 overall. He's a pretty tall guy, but a little bit undersized for what you typically see at the tight end position. So he could be a wide receiver tight end hybrid. If you remember Jody Fortson, who was in the preseason with the Chiefs this past year, very similar guy to that, where he's got a lot of speed and very, very natural athleticism to his game. He's pretty good with the ball in his hands. The problem is at LSU, he just didn't get a lot of opportunities to make catches over the middle. So I think he's a run after the catch guy. But again, that move does not maybe make as much sense now after the Ricky Seals-Jones signing. But yeah, for our mock draft 2.0, again, if you haven't checked it out, seven picks right there, a couple defensive back picks. We had some trades involved, some guys that I think could be impact defensive starters right away. You have depth for the offense and the offensive line, and of course in the running back room there. So go check that out from Friday if you have not already. We will have one more mock draft come out before April's NFL draft takes place. I'm hoping to get that out. If it's not a week before the draft, it'll probably be maybe one of the last things I have come out before the NFL draft takes place on April 23rd. So stay tuned for our final mock draft, our third one. Should be out in the coming weeks, obviously, as we get closer to the draft. Of course, I'm going to try to get as much more draft profiles done as I can, given the amount of time that I have before the draft takes place. There's some guys that I know I'm maybe not going to get to as far as the writing goes, but there's a lot of guys, if we don't write about them, maybe the Chiefs will still take them, and we'll be able to write about them in the future. But certainly, there's a lot of draft profiles in the tank on the way. I believe the next one is going to be linebacker David Woodward from Utah State. And then after that, I believe the next couple I have on the dock is cornerback Bryce Hall from Virginia and running back Anthony McFarland, who's been touted as a Chiefs fit most of the pre-draft process from Maryland. So those are the next few draft profiles that will have come out, of course. So stay tuned to that. And we will have a piece also about the Sammy Watkins contract and how really this, what this shows about the Chiefs as a whole. So that should be coming out very soon as well in the next coming days. Of course, just stay tuned to fullpresscoverage.com, Full Press Coverage Chiefs. Again, if you want to join the Full Press Coverage team, you can go to fullpresscoverage.com/employment. If you're looking to be a writer, a podcaster, or an editor, there are opportunities out there for you. So go check that out. That out there. Of course, our friends over at Sportscaster, visit their full press coverage page there at sportscaster.com/full press coverage. Great daily video content there, FPC Radio Live. Always excited to hear what those guys have to say with Ian and Mike. And of course, if you want to create your own account on Sportscaster, you can do so. Broadcast your own sports opinions out to the world. It's simple. It's easy. Another thing that's easy, just to follow all these FPC Chiefs podcast episodes in one place, and our FPC Chiefs content, as well as the other full press coverage content. Go to the App Store and download the Full Press Coverage app. You know, it's a newer app still, but gotten a lot of good feedback from it, I know. And of course, it's easier just to find everything in one spot. So go download that if you have not already. And of course, yeah, just stay tuned to Full Press Coverage Chiefs, fullpresscoverage.com. You guys can follow me on Twitter at ebearcat9, all one word, lowercase, and the number 9. Follow the Full Press Coverage Chiefs Twitter account as well at capital F, capital P, capital C, underscore Chiefs. We sometimes tweet out stuff that is not involved in the article. So if you're looking for extra news or content there, you can find it on the Twitter account. So yeah, just stay tuned to our stuff. Again, a lot of draft content coming out as we just finish up the home stretch to the NFL draft here in the next few weeks. I'm excited to see how the NFL draft will actually go down, with just how teams are able to capitalize or how others are affected maybe in a different way because of the circumstances of going fully virtual. But I'm just excited for the draft every year. But this year it's going to be really interesting and exciting to see how things go down. So just stay tuned to all our latest stuff, fullpresscoverage.com, Full Press Coverage Chiefs, and we will see you guys next time.